Hi, everyone. This is your host, Susanna. If you're new here, welcome. I am so excited that you decided to check out the 5 to 8 Shift podcast. And if you have been around for two seasons and then some, I am so grateful. I am so thankful. Thanks for being here. Thanks for sharing with your friends in real life and on your socials. And I'm excited to bring you guys our throwback summer series. So it's August in Pennsylvania. It is hot and humid and wonderful. And my birthday month. So, you know, no complaining on this front. And so last summer I did a throwback series and we really got some great feedback. And so I wanted to do it again. And so I'm sharing with you guys four amazing episodes from season two that we really got a lot of feedback on, that people really enjoyed and found a lot of value in and insight in and listened to and shared with other people. And so we picked four of great guests who we were so thrilled to have on the podcast that we're going to re-air this August. And then, very exciting, in September, we're going to come out with season three. And so we are going to be doing some series for season three. So we're going to pick a topic and we're going to do a little bit deeper dive into that topic and kind of get a couple guests giving us different angles and different perspectives around the different topics. And so you guys are going to have to check in September to hear what they are. But I really hope you do. I hope you follow on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. As always, if you want to help, we would love a review. We would love for you to share on your socials. And I really hope you enjoy this throwback series. And I hope you are having a great summer. Thanks for being here. You guys have a great day. This is Susanna McMonagle, and you're listening to season two of the 5 to 8 Shift podcast for parents. The 5 to 8 Shift podcasting community exists to educate, inspire, and encourage parents throughout their own parenthood and family life adventure. Here, we talk about all the things impacting parents today, everything from health to big emotions, toddlers to teenagers, faith, self-care, stress, and so much more. We know parenting is tough work, but family life is worth every ounce of effort. We're building a community of parents to remind you that you're not alone. Family is one of life's greatest adventures. I look forward to cheering you on in your own 5 to 8 shift. It's the most important shift of the day. Hey everybody, it's Susanna. Welcome to another episode of the 5 to 8 shift. I'm so glad that you're here. I have an awesome episode on tap today. I'm going to jump right in. I want to talk about it. Happy January, February, March, whenever you're listening to this. Thanks for sharing it with your friends, sharing it on your socials. And today's episode is with Darlene Childress. So she calls herself the Calm Mama. And listen, we could use a lot more calm over here in the McMonagle house. And so I was so excited to have her on the podcast. And she left me with so much food for thought, so much to think about, but in a way that felt totally tangible and not overwhelming. She herself is very calm, you know, which helped me really think through some of the things that we can, you know, do better over here. But she never made me feel like I wasn't doing better in the first place. So she is seriously wonderful and such a wealth of knowledge. And so her website is called Calm Mama Coaching, and she has this wonderful system to help parents stop yelling at their kids. So if you're like me, you're probably yelling a little bit more than you want to, and you know it. And she has got so many wonderful tips. And so Darlene has two boys of her own. She's a life coach, parent coach. She's worked with hundreds of moms who have gone on this journey with her. And she has a great system. And I just know you guys are really going to love it. So if you love the kinds of episodes where you learn from an expert and you have some tangible tips without the overwhelm, y'all, you're going to love this one. All right. So I'm just going to drop you into this episode. As always, if you want to help this podcast, share with a friend and leave us a review on Apple or Spotify or Amazon or wherever you listen to your podcast. So again, Darlene Childress, Calm Mama School. You can find her on Instagram at Darlene Childress. Y'all have a great day. Thanks for being here. Everybody, today we have Darlene Childress. I'm excited to have her on the podcast today. She's going to be talking to us about yelling and some other exciting topics. So I'm going to have her. Darlene, why don't you do a little background, a little introduction for my listeners today?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me, Susanna. It's great to be here. And yeah, so my name is Darlene, and I help moms stop yelling. Yes. And really my focus is on helping moms feel calm. So we talk a lot about the deep calm. One of my clients calls it legit calm.
Okay.
And we start with the absence of yelling. It's kind of the beginning of calm, is learning how to stop yourself from yelling, and then do that deeper internal work to get yourself into a different emotional and mental headspace so that you're not reacting to your kid's behavior in the first place.
Yeah.
So I have a whole program that helps moms get to legit calm.
Okay. So let's back up a little bit. So how did you get into this kind of work? I mean, I feel like this is a very specific, so interesting. I mean, we are definitely, there's been some yelling in this household. Mm-hmm. I'll just be very honest. And so how did you get into this line of work?
Yeah. Well, I call myself a reformed yeller.
Okay.
Yeah. I definitely was a mad mom, and it was surprising to me because I really wanted to be a mom, and I worked for those little kids, and then they came into my life and I felt completely overwhelmed by misbehavior. Mm. And I had an aggressive, I don't like to think of him that way now, but he was like, you know, a hitter, kicker, spitter kind of kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, my kids are 2 years apart. So I had this really like volatile little ball of energy, and he was kind of aggressive. So he was like, you know, aggressive to his little brother. Yeah. And it was really overwhelming to me. And I felt frustrated. And then also just little things like, put your shoes on, come on, let's go. Or when he was hitting me, I just found myself completely reactive, yelling. Yeah. I didn't hit, but I wanted to.
Yeah.
I was just in like mama rage. Mm-hmm. And it broke my heart. But more than anything, it was ruining my relationship with my son. Mm-hmm. And his self-esteem. And there was this moment when he was about 4 years old, he was falling asleep in his little toddler bed. And I just got his brother to sleep. And I went in and I was, you know, doing his cuddles. And we had a really hard day, me yelling, him crying, lots of temper tantrums, just a lot of chaos. And I said, hey, buddy, you know I love you, right? And then he said, I know you love me, Mama. I don't think you like me very much.
Aww.
And it was like, I need help. I need to figure this out. I need to change. I need to drastically transform how I'm responding to my kids. And that set me off on a really long journey. My kids are now 17 and 15. And so that was, I guess, 11 years ago.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So you got a decade of research putting into this kind of work.
Yeah. It was 13 years ago. I just did the math of it. I'm like, wait, I'm not doing good math. Oh,
well, I'm the most terrible math. So I'll be like, yeah, you could have said six. I'd be like, yeah, okay, perfect. That makes sense. So I cannot help you in that department. So, okay. So why do we yell? You use the word reactive. Is that always like where it starts?
Yeah. So essentially there's a circumstance in our life, right? Our kids misbehave, or we feel like we're running late, or they hurt their brother. They say no, they don't want to eat the meatball. Yeah. They, you know, whatever the thing is. the first time I ever yelled at my son was over a meatball.
Oh, that I'm surprised you remember.
he was 13 months old. And I remember getting so mad because he kept throwing the meatball on the ground from his high chair. Yeah. I was like,
I have a 16-month-old. So yeah, well, I'm right there. Maybe not a meatball, yeah, hot mm-hmm. dog, chicken, mm-hmm.
something. Yes. Yeah. So we have this, whatever it is in our life, and we make it mean something, right? We either are worried about the future, or we're worried that people are going to judge us. like we're worried our kids aren't going to be okay. They're going to grow up and be total jerks. And like, if they don't eat the meatball now, they're going to have an eating disorder later or something. Like we go all the way. Or like, if they say no, when they're three, how's it going to be when they're 13? We spin the future, or we worry about being late or having other people, you know, judge us. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes it triggers past times where we felt disrespected or hurt or victimized in some ways. So we are interpreting our children's behavior all the time and experiencing it, right?
Right.
Sometimes it comes like a fire hydrant, like just, yes. you know, pour it out. There's so many circumstances all day long, so much behavior yeah. all day long.
Yes.
So we are like mindset, our thoughts are what is actually we're reacting to. And then we have a ton of feelings.
Yeah.
So we feel overwhelmed. We feel angry. We feel disappointed, hurt, guilty. I mean, I can go on, right? Different yeah. emotions come up. And from that emotional space, we act. And that's where yelling comes from. That's why we're yelling, is because of our own story we're telling ourselves about that behavior or the circumstance. I call them tricky parenting moments.
Tricky parenting moments. And there are plentiful. I think that's so interesting that you talk about our reactions are really can be our own worry about the future and our own worry, you know, about judgment from other parents, because I think in the moment you don't see it that way. Right. Like in the moment, like I'm thinking with my 6-year-old, she's a back talking queen right mm-hmm. now. Right. And I'm just like, oh girl, like, yes, you're going to be a great CEO, but we're not jiving right now. But like, you know, in the moment, I'm just like, you're so disrespectful, but you're right. Like, I don't want them to grow up and be the mean girl in high school. Right. Mm-hmm. Or be, you know, the biggest jerk at their workplace. And so what I like about this too, is like kind of what we were just talking about off air, but this idea that parenting is the whole gamut, mm-hmm. right? It's the things you're doing when they're 4 and when they're 8 and when they're 12. And so it can start young. And I feel like when we're yelling all the time, we're not setting them up for success. And we are in turn are projecting some of those things on them. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. I love that you use the phrase back talk, because I love to break down concepts and words. And when you have a kid who's talking back, what does it mean that you're doing then?
I don't know. What am I doing?
You're talking.
Yeah.
Right. You're talking.
Right.
And then they're back talking.
Right.
So you're talking, then they're talking, then you're talking, then they're talking. So they're back talking.
Right? Yeah.
So when the whole purpose of calm and stop yelling and all of that is so yeah. that we can emotionally coach our kids.
Yeah.
That's actually the deeper purpose behind my work with moms, is that you get to calm so that you can teach your children how to manage their emotions
mm-hmm.
in ways that actually work for everybody. So you have your daughter and she's backtacking, right? And you've got a whole story about what that means and how she should act and all mm-hmm. of this, from your upbringing, from your friend group, like all of, right? Society yeah. tells us how kids should act.
Sure.
But the truth is, they have the same scenario in their heads that we have in ours. They have thoughts that bring up feelings that show up in their behavior.
Yeah.
And when you have a person who's not feeling heard, who's being talked at, I call it a monologue.
It's a good one.
Yeah. Who's like being lectured at, right? Like all the things telling, you know, we're telling them all the things, and then they're talking back because they want to tell you what they want to tell you, all the things.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. So your daughter in that moment is having trouble regulating her own emotion.
Right.
So your daughter's having trouble in that moment regulating her own emotion, communicating the depth of her frustration or overwhelm or you know, fear, what worry, whatever's going on for her, that's the reason that she's showing up in the behavior she's showing up in. And so when we're calm and we're managing our emotion, we're, you know, checking into our own mind about ourselves and we get to calm, then the next part of my process is connect.
So tell me more about connect. That's seems like a logical step, but how, like, tell me how we do that then.
The how, I love it. Well, we want to always think about the why before we go into the how.
Okay.
A little bit, because when I think about, like, I'm a life coach and a parent coach, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I care a lot about humans. And my goal in life is to have a generation of children who grow up, who know how to manage their emotions and can show up in the world as empathetic people.
Yeah.
So, which that means that they can anticipate or notice what other people might be feeling.
Hmm.
Instead of looking at the external behavior, they're also looking at the internal person and wondering what's going on with that person. Like, are they hurting? What's it like to be them? They're showing up this way. What does that mean? So the why of connect is really about emotional literacy. Hmm. And what emotional literacy is it's two parts. The first part is about us knowing what I'm feeling, knowing how to talk about it, knowing what to do about it.
Meaning us, the parents.
Us, the person.
Okay.
Yeah. Like any human, right? Like if this first part of emotional literacy is I can go inside and I can be aware. I know what I'm feeling, which is a huge thing to know what it is called.
Oh,
it
is. It's
messy in there.
Yes, it is. That's gotta be half the battle on some level.
For sure. Naming. That's why I just naming that. So we have this naming what's going on, talking about it, articulating it, be able to put words to it, and then knowing what to do about it. That's a very high level skill.
It is.
And then the second part of emotional literacy is knowing what to do about it. Hmm. I mean, sorry, is knowing, the second part is helping someone else with that.
Yeah.
So you're looking at someone and saying, oh, I wonder what they're feeling. Let me see if they want to talk about it. Let me help support them through their emotional experience. Hmm. So how does that get taught? And that we go into the how. Well, the benefits of it are huge, right? Like if I know how to manage my emotions, I'm going to be able to shift through my emotional experience. So if I'm grumpy, I know what that means. I know what to do about grumpy. If I'm really joyful, I know how to sit in that joy. If I'm grieving, I know how to sit in that grief and let it pass. Whatever the emotional part of my life is.
Right.
So if you have teach kids how to do it.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, the power of that for themselves. And then they become humans who do that for other people.
So what, like, do you have age parameters? So if I'm trying to work with, for example, my three-year-old, mm-hmm. are you like, that's too young? Wait till they're six. I mean, so like, is it something that develops more as they get, I mean, of course it develops more, but like, is there things that like should be off limits for three because they don't understand grief or something like that? I mean, how do you work with parents who have young children versus maybe parents who have like middle schoolers? How would it differentiate?
Yeah, I like this question too, because my program I have, it's called Come Mama School.
Okay.
And in that program, there's people with 2-3-year-olds and 17-year-olds, like are figuring out how to launch their kids into college. And it's group coaching and everyone is listening and everyone is always learning, even though they're not dealing with the exact same behavior.
Mm-hmm.
The process that I created is for any age because it's actually a relationship model.
Okay.
It's how to be in a relationship with another person. I can explain more what that means. But thinking about a toddler or preschooler,
mm-hmm.
they really don't have language to explain the emotions. So naming is incredibly powerful. That's when they're feeling so many of the feelings all the time.
Yes. Yes, they are. They're learning all the time, from the time they wake up till the time they go to bed.
So many opportunities to name that emotion. Because the truth is, when they get to middle school, it's much more complicated because they aren't coming home telling you you're not with them as much and you're not experiencing them all the time. So you don't have as many opportunities to name that emotion.
Right.
To be a little bit more of a sleuth, a detective, when they come home and they have their deep, heavy sigh and they throw their backpack on the ground. That's might be all you get.
Yeah. And so you're saying take opportunities with those toddlers while you have them?
Yes. And start naming that. I mean, that's what I did with my boys when I started this work. They were 4 and 2. Hmm. And it has been an incredible journey to watch them become emotionally literate.
Yeah.
And knowing how to just name their own emotion and talk about it and know what they need in order to process through that emotion without buffering. So buffering is the distance we put in between ourselves and our emotion, things that we don't want to feel that are so hard.
Yeah.
Then we put in place video gaming, like for kids, video gaming or eating sugar or asking for play dates all day long. Or I used to do this little song with my son. It would be sugar, 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 TV, TV, play date. It's like the only thing he ever asked for. As you get older, those buffers change, right?
Sure.
You have overdrinking, overworking, overworking out, over dieting, or overeating. Like it can go any direction.
Over phone, over social media, over, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's really just, I mean, that's not, we don't have to experience and process every emotion. It's 100% fine, mamas, to like go out and just zone out on your phone for 10 minutes.
Sure.
It's overwhelming sometimes. It's okay. Just when we find ourselves avoiding that negative emotion over and over and over again, that's when it's a good clue to us of, oh, I might be needing to process some big feelings.
Hmm. So can you walk us through an example? Let's say like a kindergartner or first grader, right? Mm-hmm. So they are, maybe something happened at school and they come home. Like walk us through, like, how could we help them name it? You know, and I realize this is a process and I'm asking you to like sort of drop us in the middle here. But so we name it. And then like, what are some ways that we can help them process that?
Yeah, great question. So we always start with calm though, because how it actually shows up, these big feelings, is in behavior.
Okay.
So you get a kindergartner and they get in the car, they get in the van. And the next thing you know, they're hitting little sibling, little three-year-old, or grabbing little three-year-olds in the car seat, happily listening to their favorite song and they have their sippy cup and they're lovey and everything is fine.
Yes.
And like little six-year-old gets in and is recognizing the comfort and that whole emotional experience that little one is having.
Yeah.
And is in their own physical or emotional turmoil. Hmm. So they grab lovey. And they hold it or they throw it on the ground or they, you know, say, turn off that song.
Yes. What,
right. Yes.
It's like you're in my car. Keep going.
Yeah. And, you know, you have three. So then you have this little one as well. That's like also you're just trying to get that one to like not fall asleep, but stay sleepy so that you can get home and get nap. I mean, your brain is just. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. You've nailed it 100%. You got an A+.
Yes. I have spent 10 years thinking about mamas. Yes. So our mom mind is going to go to like that older sibling is a problem. Why can't she just be chill? Don't mess up the vibe. Just get hope. Like we can start to get into our own head.
Yeah.
And that means we're not present for the person, the little six-year-old who wants to maybe work through some big feelings of whatever happened, like got the paper last as they were walking out. It's like, it could be something so small to us, or like there's a pebble in their shoe and it's been there all day and they haven't been able to figure out how. Kindergartners do not know how to take care of themselves. So uncomfortable all day and so afraid to like ask the teacher if they could take off their shoe because the teacher said, don't ever take off your shoes.
And yes. So
they said they're in their own spin as well.
Right.
So in the moment, it's hard for the mom to recognize who needs emotional support.
Yeah.
Because the next thing you know, you've got a three-year-old crying because their lovey's on the floor. Mm-hmm. And your brain will tell you, uh-oh, we got a perpetrator and a victim.
Yeah.
Huh? And I better teach this perpetrator not to take her sister's lovey.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's not, if you can understand that feelings drive behavior and that the emotion that your child is experiencing is what they need support with. And when they know how to manage their feelings, they won't steal the sister's lovey.
Yeah.
They won't walk in the car like a Tasmanian devil processing all their negative emotion in a very safe. So what if once your child is able to like walk in and be like, I had a hard day and I'm so frustrated and that was irritating and I have a pebble in my shoe and then my teacher told me to go last in line because I was taking so long, and like really kind of narrating what's happening to them.
Yes.
That would be so much healthier and more peace for everybody.
Yeah.
And that's the opportunity in the moment. Oh, look at you. Taking your sister's lovey, throwing it on the ground, you know, screaming, change the channel or change the song, you know, going,
yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if you're feeling a little overwhelmed from today. And allow room for her to tell her story to you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just, you know, of course, thinking of my own parenting experience, and I feel like, very focused on the behavior. And what I'm hearing you say is that that's not the beginning. That's not where, you know, I wrote down feelings drive behavior. And so you're saying we need to take a step back and really dig in.
Yeah. I call this a feelings first model versus a behavior first model.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean we don't address behavior.
Well, and that's kind of like my next question. It's like, I like personally, I'm like, if I ever let this behavior go, then it happens again. And then it's bigger and then it's wild. You know, it's like the kids never sit at dinner, right? They're jumping up and down. They're running around. They always have to go to the bathroom. They always need more water.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I'm so tired of the behavior. So I'm always like, I can never let it go. So then like, how do we marry, you know, the feelings first, or I should say, does the feelings first take care of the behavior? Like, you tell me, how does the behavior then remedy?
Yes. So the Calm Mama process is four steps. So it's calm, connect, limit set, correct.
Okay.
So teaching limits is really, really important in my program, because what it does is it kind of creates, I think of it as a pivot. It kind of forces the child within a container of what is allowed, what behavior is allowed. How can you express that feeling? How can you express that need or whatever it is? So we create limits, and I have a whole course on this, like the limit setting formula and the limit setting process.
Awesome.
Because we need these limits and it helps our mind. So for an example, dinner, you are welcome to sit at the table, to eat dinner as long as you are sitting at the table. And dinner is going to end at 6:30. So you got kids up and down, up and down, up and down, no problem. They are not eating while they're up. They're only eating when they're down, like sitting down.
Mm-hmm.
And then 6:30 comes. Dinner is over. Take those chicken nuggets, dump them in the trash. Some people will save them. That's fine too, you know. And then that's it. That's the end of the meal.
Yeah.
So then what happens?
Then they ask for a snack 5 minutes later.
Yes, they do. And so that is the correct piece. Like the correction piece is really the consequence part, where it's, I think of consequences as cone sequence with sequence. The next thing, action has an impact.
Yep.
So we want our kids to experience the impact of their decision. And the more they experience that impact while being emotionally coached about the feeling that's driving the behavior in the first place,
mm-hmm.
then eventually they come together and they change their behavior. They manage their emotions, so they don't need to do the behavior as much. Yep. They also recognize that the behavior is going to cost them something.
That's right.
If it causes a problem, then it causes a problem. They have to deal with the impact of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I teach a restorative justice model, like a restitution model. So some consequences are really easy peasy, like dinner ends at 6:30, get it while you can.
Yeah.
Aw, that's sad. Get enough food. Yeah, that's hard. Yeah, your tummy's growling.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to have a big breakfast. It'll be all right. Moms freak out, by the way. What? You're going to put a kid to bed hungry? Oh my goodness. What? That's terrible.
Oh, that's funny.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's like going back to our own calm. We need to be comfortable with our kids' discomfort.
That's right. That's a good line.
Mm-hmm. It's something I say like all the time. Yeah. Because it is really important. We need to be comfortable with their discomfort in the connection part.
Yeah.
Of the process. But they're going to have a whole story they tell, and big feelings are going to come. And, you know, we want to like be okay with any feeling that our children express.
Yeah.
And we need to be okay with their discomfort around the consequences that they experience. Because our children do not stop and say, you know what? Thanks. I am so glad you're teaching me personal responsibility and cause and effect. So good.
No, not, at least not yet for me. I'm waiting. No.
I think it's like 25, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And so the limits are really important. And we can say, I will drive this car as long as there's no screaming.
Yeah.
Then we pull over. I'm happy to help put socks and shoes on up until 8 o'clock or till the timer, if you have little ones, till the timer goes off. And then the timer goes off. And then you're not helping with socks and shoes. And then they're crying and they're walking to the car and they're, what am I going to do? And you say, I don't know. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
You could carry your shoes into school. I mean, it's a pretty extreme example. If you live in the snow or something.
Yeah.
So you have to have limits that work for you. And that makes sense.
Yeah. And it sounds like, you know, obviously I run this parenting podcast and I think a lot about parenting. And sometimes I'm just, it's consistency on the parents' mm-hmm. part. And that's what I hear you saying. And I love what you're telling me about the Calm Mama School, because it seems like it has a plan, right? So sometimes we have good intentions to be consistent, but we don't have the right plan mm-hmm. and it doesn't stick.
Yeah. Yeah. I think of it, I like to help moms get away from the concept of consistency a little bit, because it can feel really pressury.
Okay.
Like, oh, yeah. I didn't stick to it. Like, I'm not being consistent. I think of it like commitment.
Yeah.
So if you say a limit in the moment, like that day, like I will serve dinner up until 6:30.
Yeah.
That you are committed to that limit for that day. And then if tomorrow you're like, well, that was not good. that one did not work for me. I'm not going to stick to it. Then you can find a new limit that actually works for your family. Then as you work through those limits, then you find the one that you can be consistent with.
Yeah.
But if you're going to say something like, I'll drive this car as long as there's no screaming, and then you pull over, and then they start screaming again, and then you pull over again. Mm-hmm. If you don't, you're like, okay, I'm just going to keep driving home with the screaming. You're communicating to your children that you don't listen to yourself.
Mm.
So if you don't listen to your rules and limits,
that's
why
right.
would your children?
That's huge. Mm-hmm. You can see how that modeling behavior goes off the rails pretty quickly right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's all coping for the mom. Like, dear Lord, get me home. Like, get these human beings back into the house.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And like, let's get everybody some apple juice and reset. And that's fine. I just don't love, as a parent coach, I have to be really careful to not help. I don't want to contribute to mom guilt or any right. of that. It's like, get through the moment in the best way you can, because the calm is always the most important. And the connect and limit set and correct only come when you are in a good headspace. Anything else, anything that you do from that lack of calm,
yep.
it kind of has a tinge of shame with our kids, or yep. punishment, or I don't know, anger. It's just,
yeah. Yeah. You know, when you have me thinking, darling, you know, a lot of yelling in our house comes when we're late, and we are always late. You mm-hmm. know, my husband used to be on time before I was around, but, since then. And so, but what I feel like you're challenging me on is it's probably more important to set that calm environment and be 5 minutes late than to always, you know, and we have like a small foyer and there's just shoes and coats and hats and crap everywhere. You know, there's five of us in this tiny little space trying to get out the door. And I'm feeling challenged by that in a really good way, because most places it doesn't matter if we're 5 minutes late, you know, and then one kid's always crying because we were yelling. Like, I'm like, when you're like, carry his shoes, I am digging that. I will happily have you carry your shoes, you know, the six steps to the car outside. I'm like, I feel good about that choice. And I'm just like, yeah. I think that would be so much more smooth. Like, I'm picturing this smoother environment. And I feel like probably, and you tell me if I'm wrong, in the beginning, there's always going to be like, you might be late because you're being calm instead of some of these other things. We might not do X, Y, and Z exactly how we want to do it.
Yes.
And I feel like you're telling me like the payoff is on the other side.
Yes. Because the more emotionally regulated, the more calm your children feel, the yeah. better they show up.
Yes.
I mean, you think you're going to rush through and it'll be so great and you'll get to where you're supposed to go. But then the next thing you know, you have a meltdown on your hands.
Yes.
And you're 10 minutes late.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I feel like I could talk to you for like another 2 hours. This is so interesting, you know, and we're just like in the thick of it, you know, especially yeah. I feel like the toddler age can have its own challenges. Mm-hmm. And then, and so this is like, so something I am working on and learning mm-hmm. about, and I love that you're doing this work. So I want to be cognizant of our time here. And I have two questions I ask every guest at the end. And the first one is, what is your favorite family activity? So you have two teen boys. What is one thing you guys like to do together?
Yeah, we hike a ton.
That's awesome.
And we live in Southern California. There's lots of hiking nearby our house, which people always think of the beach when they think of Southern California.
Yeah, but of course. Yeah.
There's like a whole mountain range next to the beach. So we hang out there. And I find that while we're hiking, it's the time where no one is on their phone.
Yeah.
There's just, we're just walking.
Yep.
And there's a great opportunity for conversation
yeah.
and silence. So it's like, we do that a ton. That's our favorite thing to do as a family.
I love it. And the last one is, I feel like you've shared like the tip of the iceberg of all this wonderful knowledge that you've been putting together for the last decade. So how can people connect with you? Where can they learn more about the Calm Mama School and really like getting their hands on some of this material?
Yeah. Well, for your audience, I'd love to offer the Stop Yelling at Your Kids masterclass that yes. I have on my website.
Okay.
So yeah. Like it's a 3 30-minute lessons and it okay. has a workbook. And so that is an amazing resource that is just available for free for any mom who wants to become calm really. Okay. I teach kind of some main concepts around becoming calm, which is the pause, reset your body, reset your mind. So I encourage anyone to get that. And you can find that at calmmamacoaching.com.
Okay. Calm Mama, M-A-M-A
coaching. M-A-M-A. Yeah. Calmmamacoaching.com. And that's like the first thing that pops up is that, you know, stop yelling at your kids.
Okay. So you said it's 3 30-minute sessions and a workbook.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. And they come one a day for 3 days so that you don't binge them, let them go in your heart and your head, you know?
Well, I love it. See, I can tell you've done this before. You're rather than like, we get on at 11 PM cause we're just so distraught and we watch it. And then we're like, what did we watch yesterday?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So that's a great resource. And then you can always follow me at Darlene Childress on Instagram. And I post every day, you know, some sort of mindset or strategy for moms to do any part of the process. So sometimes there's one on calm, sometimes connect, sometimes limit set, sometimes correct. Very rarely do I talk about consequences, but I do in my program a lot.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And then Calm Mama School it's a lifetime membership. So you sign up once, it's $2,000, and then you're a Calm Mama for life. And okay. You get to be coached by me twice a week. And we have there's an online course and then daily email support and private Facebook group, all the things for $2,000. So it's an amazing program.
Wonderful resource. Yeah. Like, you know, all these things that we spend money on, I feel like just like having tools to show up well for your kids has got to be more on the top of our list, right?
Yes. Well, we think that, oh, if we do this, this, and this, then our kids will, you know, we'll be happy ourselves. But really, once your kids are better behaved and you feel better about parenting, you can achieve a bunch of extra things that you want in your life. Your house can be organized, or you can, you know, lose weight, or, you know, whatever the goal, other goals are, build your career, work on your marriage.
So true.
Yeah. It's like, get your kids in a space, your family into that peaceful home.
Yes.
And the rest is easy.
Oh, thank you so much, Darlene.
Yeah, thank
this
you
has
for
seriously
having me.
Been so interesting. And I'm so happy you're doing this kind of work.
Thanks for listening in today. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to rate and review us wherever you're listening to this podcast. Be sure to share with us on Instagram what you liked most about the episode by tagging me at Susanna.McMonagle. And lastly, if you want more information about the 5 to 8 shift, you can check out our website, the5to8shift.com. We'll see you guys next time.